Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
In issues of racism, there are going to be some who will say, why don't you stick to preaching gospel?
The social, political, and economic concerns have increasingly encroached upon the minds of those who should know better.
The real transformative work in a nation is the transformative work of the gospel.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The voice you are about to hear is not the voice of a prophet.
This is Wretched Radio.
You okay, Todd? I think you're getting a message from God.
No, I've got a sinus condition like Felix Unger. Yeah. Let's see if I can make a prophecy. No, I do not have the ability to predict the future. That office, it is closed. We have a sufficient Bible for all of life and godliness. I would simply like to make a little bit of a prediction that the lyrics for the number one song on the Christian charts on iTunes that are causing a great deal of hullabaloo because the singer is an open and professed lesbian, I predict there's another issue, that the lyrics to said songs that are number one on the Christian iTunes chart are probably not very Christian. When are we going to decide that we do not let anything that calls itself Christian qualify for being Christian? So here's my prediction. Jimmy Jam, if you'd look up the lyrics, the name of the group, the name of the woman, her name is Semler. Her real name is Grace Baldridge. It's called Preacher's Kids. There are 8 songs. Currently, one is number one. Be careful when you read the lyrics, Jimmy, because the EP comes with an explicit language warning.
Yeah, I've got a couple up here.
All righty, what do you got?
Youth Group, which I know is your favorite.
I love youth groups. Yes, yeah. Fire away.
Youth Group.
If they're showing Road Trip to Truth, available at wretched.org, /road trip. Go ahead. Sorry.
Youth group lock-ins are really strange concepts that youth group leaders seem to really like. Let's take some repressed hormonal teenagers and put them in a church and hope they find Jesus overnight. Like, yeah. Is your sexuality, this one's for the kids, who's having their sexual awakening at the youth group lock-in. It must have been confusing, and I hope you're doing well.
Okay. I quite honestly, I think a conversation about youth group lock-ins is a good one to have. But that particular song, does that sound like a Christian song? Whether you agree with the critique of lock-ins or not, that's a Christian song. You got any others in there?
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that, but Jesus is from Texas.
Huh?
Yeah, my mom turned 18 in the 1960s, and she doesn't remember Stonewall. To be fair, she can't have known I'd be her kid, that the bricks launched at the police would compel me to exist. And I think that about that now, down the ballot, of the ones I love and don't know yet. And I don't even know how this is Christian.
Well, she's a young lady who believes that she's a lesbian. And so apparently she has evangelical parents. And so this is her public opportunity to express her feelings. Now, what is this going to do? What music so often does? It brings people in. It emboldens them. It helps them to feel affirmed. And it's going to allow people to be more overt and make a decision to live in a lifestyle of sin. Music is powerful. And we apparently are willing to let anything be called Christian. I mean, I say this, normally we wouldn't be talking about this, but this is like a big deal because, oh, it's the number one song on the Christian iTunes chart, which is actually a big deal. When you lock Lauren Daigle off of the charts, that's a big deal. And everybody, of course, is focusing on the fact that she's a lesbian. I think that's appropriate, but how's about the lyrics aren't Christian? Can't we have a higher standard for what we're singing in Christian music than this? Honestly.
Oh, this one doesn't even make sense.
Oh, that's why you're looking at me funny. I'm looking at you and you're looking at me. So
I just kept reading these lyrics to Jesus is from Texas. She says, these days I believe in Bigfoot more than God.
good.
Yeah. And
that's
it's Christian.
A good Christian song. Well done, iTunes charts. Well done to all the Christian retail outlets or online outlets that allow this type of thing to even be called Christian. Oh, honestly. Sorry, did I mention I've got a sinus issue? Would like to offer you yet another prophetic utterance. Not that I can predict the future, but I've been thinking about conspiracy theories. Can I tell you which ones are right and wrong? I've got an opinion, but I can't tell you what is right and wrong. But I certainly have noticed there's a lot more of them lately. It's not just QAnon. It's a lot of stuff. And I've noticed that a lot of evangelicals are into them. And I get it. I really do. Believe me, I get it. And I think that there's a lot that can be revealed in our hearts about why we are so inclined to give a more open ear to a hearing about a conspiracy theory. I think it in some ways it helps us to feel better. It gives us a little bit of hope, especially in the political realm. It's like we don't like what's going on. And so you hear that maybe the individual who's in office has a relative or somebody's coming out and saying this about the, yes. And it gives you hope, but then it turns out to be nothing. Or maybe it is actual, but it just turned out to be nothing because the media didn't report it. How do you know? What do you do with these things? I cannot tell you which ones are right and wrong. But maybe, just maybe, this, what should be, at least for me, took me a while to stumble onto this. What do I do with this stuff? Because I know my heart is inclined to hear these things. And granted, while we all have lines that we draw when it comes to conspiracy theories, I'm still open to hearing them because I don't know, they're ear ticklers, that's for sure. But I've noticed that there's a fair amount of infighting going on in evangelical Christianity because people don't agree on the conspiracy theory. So what is the best way to handle them so that my heart doesn't get crushed, doesn't get led astray from the simplicity that is in Christ? And that doesn't cause me to get into a fight with somebody because they think this about 9/11. Wait, just wait. That's what I've been finding myself doing. I hear them, I see them. I've got a cell phone too, you know, and they pop up and there's something tantalizing about them. But I've also noticed that a lot of Christians are engaging in them to the point of getting annoyed with one another because we don't have full agreement on this one or that one, as if they're issues of orthodoxy, which they are not. And so I have determined, and this might be helpful for you, it might not, just wait. Time will likely reveal it. And if it doesn't, you'll probably just forget about it. And you won't be consumed by things that are potentially, not necessarily, but potentially frivolous. And I know your response. Somebody is going to say to me immediately in response to this, but see, they won't get reported because the media is so corrupt and it's being run by George Soros. I understand that. I really do. But we don't even know that to its full extent, do we? We don't know how many backroom deals are really going on, how much power somebody has or doesn't. And you're right, it may or may not be revealed in the press. Snopes may or may not get a hold of it. But I can't think of a time, quite honestly, when one of these conspiracy theories of late has had any direct implication to my life. Stuff is going to happen when it happens. Things will be revealed. Where this country is going, I don't want to be naive. I can perhaps hear somebody saying that, oh, that's just, go ahead, put your head in the sand and pretend none of this stuff is going on. No, but what I'm saying is usually the stuff that we really need to know, it does get revealed eventually. It does pop up. It makes its way through. It does become something that is important and that will have an effect on you. Now, having said that, do I believe that all of the signs are aimed toward bad things for Christians? I do. And you might say, well, then you're kind of a conspiracy theorist too. Well, that's certainly possible. I try to make a difference between what is a conspiracy theory and what somebody actually said and not take it beyond that. So, for instance, last week I heard Bill Maher saying that he thinks that Christians are delusional and we're fanatics and we're even dangerous. I can deal with that and I can say, uh-oh, if he's expressing the sentiment of a lot of people or persuading a lot of people who watch him to hold on to that sentiment, I think that could be very bad for Christians. I don't think that means that as we speak, that there are people in the government that are sharpening their sabers to cut off our heads. You say, but there could be people in government who want us to put us in jail. You're right. There could be. And that could happen. But I simply try to make a distinction between these are the things that are actually happening that we know happen, that somebody has said, and coming up with some generalities without getting into the realm of specificity where I am imagining things that while they certainly could happen, after all, remember the guys in the orange jumpsuits? They did have their heads cut off. It does happen. But does that mean that Bill Maher is encouraging people to do that? No. And so I simply want to practice some sort of discernment when it comes to conspiracy theories. And the rule that has been the most helpful for me, your mileage may vary, is to just wait. Just wait it out and let time reveal it so that your heart doesn't get troubled and you don't get annoyed with people who don't agree with you on conspiracy theories. This is Wretched Radio. 59 million people died last year from diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, but the number one leading cause of death, its very own category of 42.6 million lives that ended, abortion. It is hands down the number one leading cause of death on the globe, and that statistic can overwhelm us and cause us to give up. But it should motivate us to get engaged, get involved, and fight for one life at a time. And we can do that through preborn.org/wretched. $28 buys an ultrasound. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. That is a good investment that saves lives. Would you please consider supporting as many ultrasounds as you can at preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thank you so much for being here and joining us on Wretched Radio today. Unlike so many TV prophets out there, we can't say that persecution is inevitable, but what we can say is that it's a very real possibility. All you have to do is open your eyes a little bit. And thankfully, the Bible dedicates one entire book to the subject of persecution, and we have a 13-part series called Persecution on the book of 1 Peter. That instructs us how we should be living in these turbulent times. We want to send it to you, and it won't cost you anything. Persecution sets forth a biblical response to perhaps what's likely the most urgent question that any Christian is facing today. How do we live in a world that hates us? So how do you get your free copy, you might ask? Well, it's real simple. It's real easy. All you do is head on over to wretched.org/persecution. wretched.org/persecution. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Despite what all of the headlines say, there is some very good news happening around the globe. Jesus is still fulfilling his promise to build his church. Nothing is going to stop it. And right now in Eastern Europe, he is doing just that through the Tomorrow Clubs, kids clubs all throughout very poor Eastern European countries. And thanks to you, wretched person, more and more clubs are being sponsored, more and more kids are being saved, and more churches are being strengthened. Paul Marty from the Tomorrow Clubs.
Every time we visit a Tomorrow Club and talk to kids and leaders, we are blown away by the gospel's power to change lives. And the Wretched audience has been such a big part of making that possible.
Would you please consider sponsoring your very own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 Little Disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nyssa was an opponent of Arianism at the Council of Constantinople in 381. He wrote a book called Not Three Gods, explaining that there is one God in three persons. Each member of the Trinity is fully God, with all the divine attributes, yet each member of the Trinity is a distinct person. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Jimmy, stop reading the lyrics. This is Wretched Radio. They're getting up your nose, aren't they?
The more I read, yes.
Number one Christian song on iTunes isn't so robustly theological. In fact, it's kind of anti-Christian, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. She says, my best friend found the Savior, so we lost touch. The things that she calls, or the things that I call blessings, she calls sins.
Yeah, right, because the young lady is a lesbian, and so her friend calls sin, so they've lost touch. It's division.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, that's a Christian song. Number one. Mm. Number one. Don't you just sometimes see, I'm not saying that this is the way that it has to be, but don't you sometimes just wish for more accountability in so many ways in Christianity? But because of the different denominations, there's not as many thousands as people purport, but just because there's no accountability for Christian music, who lets a Christian song even get played on the Christian iTunes chart? Who's running that? Who are those people? Who are the ones that are running this and making these decisions? I'd like to know. Wouldn't you like to know? It's just there's no accountability. And then a lot of kids will listen to this. It will resonate with some of the kids, and it will embolden them. You watch some of these kids that are confused about sexual issues, about identity issues. It's stuff like this inside of the church. And by the way, this is not the worst stuff that is inside the church. A lot of the worship music that makes its way inside of the church, it is pure sludge, and it makes its way in. Okay, this is an anecdote, but nevertheless, I remember this was a song. What is that song? Jimmy, name that tune.
Yeah, I don't know.
The darkness, he wraps himself in light, the darkness tries to hide. What is the name? Google those lyrics. He wraps himself in light. You'll find the song. And darkness tries to hide. Because somebody made a typo on the big screen. He wraps himself in lies.
That's Chris Tomlin.
Yeah. Okay. He wraps himself in light. And darkness tries to hide.
Right.
The typo was he wraps himself in lies. What's the name of the song?
How Great Is Our God?
How Great Is Our God? Okay. I'm not saying that I don't know the song anymore, but the lyrics were describing Satan. And everybody just sang it. I remember looking around going, we were just singing about Satan. Anybody pick up on that? We could use a little bit more discernment when it comes to the lyrics of Christian music. And so a shout out to you. If you are the one responsible for Christian lyrics in your church, and you are if you're the pastor, because ultimately, brother, buck stops with you. A high wall. Don't let anything jump in. Just consider we're singing about God, not in vagaries, not with allusions that could be interpreted in all kinds of ways. Well, it's a little deficient there, but the other part of it is really good, not good enough. Out it goes. You have hundreds, if not thousands, of robust, theologically sound songs that you could be singing in church. We gotta raise the bar a little bit higher. And while you're doing that, you might just want to start be preparing your kids to think in new ways about math. That's right. Math is no longer what you remember it to be, Mom and Dad. Math used to be 2 + 2 = 4. Now, math is oppressive. That's right. Let me take you to Oregon. There's a teacher program that seeks to undo racism in mathematics. If you happen to be one of those people That is a wee bit weary of us discussing the issue of CRT, which is critical race theory. This is why we keep beating that horse, because it is the issue that is likely, if a division is going to happen in the Southern Baptist Convention this summer, if that happens, it'll be over CRT. This is a big deal. And you thought, well, it's just highfalutin philosophical meandering, just of this musings of people whose heads are in the clouds. No, they're not. These people, their heads were in the clouds, but they graduated. They were given a sheepskin. And is it a sheepskin or a lambskin? They were given a piece of paper diploma, and now they're running stuff. And now they're turning around to educate the kids with the worldview that they have been taught, which now means that mathematics is actually racist. How did they get there? It's called ethnomathematics from the Oregon Department of Education. The ODE. ODE. It's just missing the ES. The newsletter sent last week is called Pathway to Math Equity Micro Course, designed for middle school teachers to make use of a toolkit for dismantling racism in mathematics. Did you know that there's racism in mathematics?
I had no idea.
That's because critical theory gets you there. What is math? It is the construct of white European males. What are white European males? They're oppressors. Therefore, math is a part of the systemic racism that exists in the systems, sciences, math, literature, history, religion, philosophy, cultural norms, you name it. If it's been around for a while, it's oppressive and it's bad and it's got to go. And it's critical theory. This issue is not going away anytime soon. Part of the toolkit includes a list of ways white supremacy culture infiltrates math classrooms. This includes focusing on getting the, quote, right answer, being required to show their work, and other manifestations. Do you recall there was a Smithsonian exhibit not too long ago that said that we need to get rid of these cultural norms that are oppressive? Math was one of them. And we kind of chuckled about it. It's going to be in the classroom now. Do you remember it was anything that was deemed oppressive that was created by white people? So punctuality was considered oppressive because that's a white construct. Punctuality. Hard work. I've got to tell you, I just find these things staggeringly offensive. And yet they're saying those are white norms that need to be disbanded. And here it is in the classroom. And by the way, if you think that this is just going to be in the classroom, this will be in the church Sunday school, because this is what critical theory does to theology. All your understandings, they're bad. Why? Well, consider, have you read a black theologian lately? No, they were all white guys. Therefore, clearly, the church is systemically infiltrated with nothing but oppressive theology. Therefore, get rid of it all. Now, could we cite a million demonstrations? That's not so. Anybody else, for instance, right now praying like crazy for Votie Baucham? Anybody praying for him that's not black? We love Votie. I'll read stuff that he prints. We don't care about what skin color the author of the book has. Is it a good book? I'll read it. Not a good book. I don't care what skin color you are. I'm not interested in. It's making its way, though, into the church. The concept of mathematics being purely objective is unequivocally false, and teaching it is even much less so. Upholding the idea that there are always right and wrong answers perpetuate objectivity as well as fear of open conflict. So if you get the wrong answer, you're going to be conflicted upon. You're going to be hurt, apparently. So this whole system is what? Say it with me. Dangerous. An associated dismantling racism workbook linked within the toolkit similarly identifies objectivity described as, quote, the belief that there is such a thing as objective or neutral as a characteristic of white supremacy. This is outrageous and frankly insulting. Instead of focusing on one right answer, the toolkit encourages teachers to come up with at least two answers that might solve this problem. I can't wait till these kids are building stuff that I have to walk on. or drive over. It adds, quote, challenge standardized test questions by getting the, quote, right answer, but justify other answers by unpacking the assumptions that are made in the problem. Ah. So we need to bring skin color into a mathematical problem to figure out a potentially different answer. You say, this is bonkers. And I agree with you. It is absolutely bonkers. Where is this coming from? You say critical race theory. No, I come from not believing in the sufficiency of Scripture, that God determines what these how these issues play out, how we are to feel about one another, whether punctuality is good or bad, whether math is right or wrong. You see, without God, then we go wandering into these crazy imaginings that a math 2 plus 2 can have multiple answers. That's CRT. That's making its way into the church. And if this causes your head to crack open, once you duct tape it and put it back together, might I suggest these people, I don't think we can reason them into the kingdom. They need the gospel. Then God will improve their thinking. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. Well, after observing the first few weeks of the Biden administration, the CEO of America's largest abortion chain, Planned Parenthood, says she is, quote, over the moon about the Biden and Harris administration's vision for expanding abortion. And it's easy to see why. President Biden has already begun reinstating President Obama's policies. He repealed the Protecting Life and Global Health Assistance policy. He granted international abortion providers access to millions of dollars in global health funds. And he also pledged to restore Title X funding to Planned Parenthood and block states attempting to defund Planned Parenthood through Medicaid. But the funding? It's not stopping there. Biden also stands ready to expand Obamacare, which provides billions, that's with a B, of dollars in subsidies for health plans that cover elective abortion. He's also working with congressional Democrats to pass a $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package that will surely give Planned Parenthood even more bites at the apple. And it's no wonder Planned Parenthood has a vocal advocate in the White House who pledged during the campaign to fund their organization when the deep-pocketed giant was one of Joe Biden's earliest supporters. Biden made taxpayer funding of abortion one of his highest priorities, even as a recent report by the Government Accountability Office shows Planned Parenthood raked in $572.7 million of federal taxpayer funds in 2018, the highest total in the last 10 years, and $100 million more than 2008. The nation's largest abortion provider received $1.6 billion, again with a B, across fiscal years 2016, 17, and 18 at Congress's direction. And as their share of the abortion market continues to rise, so does their bottom line, subsidized by taxpayer money. Well, the biggest Christian publisher in the U.S. will no longer offer resources by the late Ravi Zacharias following the final report of an investigation of his multiple years-long pattern of abuse, and is working with at least one prominent author to remove Zacharias from other works. HarperCollins Christian Publishing, which includes Zondervan and Thomas Nelson, had published more than 20 titles authored or co-authored or edited by Zacharias over a 26-year span, including Can Man Live Without God?, which had been released in 21 languages. The HarperCollins site lists 16 English titles authored by Zacharias, which totaled more than 2 million copies in sales by the time of his death in May of 2020. Lee Strobel announced on Twitter on Friday that he and Zondervan decided to halt printings of his book, The Case for Faith, which featured Zacharias, and would publish a revised version instead. Strobel interviewed Zacharias more than 20 years ago. The interview spans 19 pages in Strobel's book. In the book, with Strobel describing the apologist as a gentle spirit with a razor-sharp intellect, as he responds to questions about the exclusive claims of Christianity. The board wrote in its statement on Thursday that they would remain passionate about seeing the gospel preached through the questions of culture, but that it would be, quote, seeking the Lord's will regarding the future of the ministry. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Books of the Bible. Amos was a shepherd called to prophesy during a time of prosperity in Israel and Judah. But this prosperity was accompanied by idolatry, extravagance, and corruption. When you consider the society you live in, Amos declares that God judges societies by his standard of righteousness. He hates all corruption and injustice. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Nope. Don't know that I have an answer, but it's a question worth asking. This is Wretched Radio sharing what's going on in Oregon. There is an effort to remove racism from mathematics. And you and I, we can read these stories and just get exasperated. What? How is it that somebody sees math, algebra, as being a racist concept? Therefore, there are multiple correct answers because the entire system itself, it isn't really real. It's just a white construct that they've used to suppress people. And you go, okay, I don't know exactly how you got there, but that just isn't in alignment with reality. I've got my little keychain here. And in order to keep office and home straight, I put my car fob between them. So here, I've got three keys on this side and four keys on that side. If I remove the fob, do you know how many keys I've got, Jimmy?
Seven. Oh, that's racist. Nine.
See, you know why you increase the number?
Why?
Because you just want more key power. Therefore, the answer is two. Because
you're on to me.
It should be something like it. Look, it's four and it's three. There's seven keys. No matter how you slice it, there's seven keys. Now, just so you know, this is the little shell game that you're playing, that they're playing with your kids. Well, aren't words just constructs anyway to represent a symbol? So your key is somebody else's bluckshine. You call it a key. They call it a bluckshine. See, words don't really have meanings. Well, yeah, they do. They're agreed upon meanings, and it's still this object. You can call it whatever you want to. It's still that. So they play this little word shell game with your kids. And let me tell you something. The chin boogie works. These kids get spun out of university totally perplexed about what is up or what is down. And yet they live and they get confronted with reality, which is totally baffling to them because the world doesn't operate the way that they've been told that it does. And when their boss says, you know, your quota for the week, you were supposed to sell 1,000 widgets. You know, your 1,000 is oppressive and racist. I only sold 200, which to me is the right number. That does not work. And so we set them up for devastation. And by the way, we see it all the time. One of the reasons that we produced Road Trip to Truth, available at wretched.org/roadtrip. How do we respond to this? Is there anything we can do? Obviously, people need to have their heart changed for their thinking to get better. Thinking doesn't just get better by being confronted with better thinking. Sometimes it does work. Okay, with some people, it's like, okay, I guess I admit it, but they still kind of hold on to some remnants of bad thinking. Bad thinking stems from bad believing. So we need to change people's hearts. But I'm just wondering, in a culture that is so bent on separating skin colors and causing us to dislike one another, you noticed that that is what is happening? I know that this is an anecdote. I believe I've shared it before. That when moving from Minnesota to Atlanta, hearing what the understanding of the North had of the South, that it's all just horribly racist and everybody's terrible toward one another. I got to tell you, we arrived in Atlanta and kindness was palpable among different ethnic groups. Now, I know not everybody feels, I'm not naive, but I'm telling you, the place has changed. There's now more love in Atlanta. There's definitely a separating. Is there anything that you and I can do to help it? You're in an elevator with somebody of a different skin color. Is there something that you could say that just might, in a small way, tear down the walls of division that are being built up? Anything that we could say or do? Jimmy, I can't think of anything that wouldn't be deemed racist today.
Not these days.
You know, you even try to say something, and depending on who you say it to, it could be deemed as being inappropriate and hate speech. They've got our hands tied on this thing. You can't win, which is why it seems to me that if we're going to go down making people annoyed, let it be with a stumbling block of the gospel. Maybe it's as simple as that. Rather than trying to say something which could get you into politically incorrect hot water, why not just go for it and evangelize? Share the gospel with somebody. And after all, I guess when you boil it down, what does it profit a culture if we're not racist, but everybody dies and goes to hell? And by the way, the solution for racism, it happens to be the gospel. I got to tell you, this thing is so set up to make us mad at one another. That's maybe the lesson that we can learn from what's going on in Oregon. This stuff can make you mad. This is de-racize. What do they call it? They call it seeks to undo racism in mathematics, ethno-mathematics, because math is racist. In one section of the Dismantling Racism workbook, the argument is made that only white people can be racist in our society. Well, that's not going to annoy anybody, is it? Because only white people as a group have power. That's critical theory. If you don't know what critical theory is, that's it in a nutshell. White people have power. We use it. We create systems. We build buildings, highways, you name it. It is all designed to oppress people. Period. Therefore, only people in power can be racist. If you don't have power, you can't harbor thoughts of superiority toward another people group. You can't be angry at somebody just because of their skin color. Only people in power can. Now, you and I know that's utterly ridiculous. This is a heart issue. And ethnic distaste or hatred toward people groups, you don't have to have black and white for that to happen. You go anywhere in the world for that can happen. You'd stay in the Midwest. You've got the Minnesota Vikings versus the Green Bay Packers. You don't need black and white. There's just people groups that hate people groups. Visit the Far East. You've got countries that dislike other countries, and they look pretty similar to one another. You don't need to have power. You don't need to have a skin. It's a heart issue. And this just does nothing but stoke it. CRT is like a billows. Just stokes it up. In some cases, from this undoing racism in mathematics, in some cases, the prejudices of oppressed people, and in parentheses it says, you can't trust the police, are necessary for survival. So people who are oppressed can have prejudices like you can't trust the police because otherwise they die. Well, that's going to make for a wonderful culture, isn't it? This is absolutely headed for disaster. And this is what we're inviting into the church? And this is what is being debated in the Southern Baptist Convention this summer? Oof-da. This is, I don't know that this is going to end well for the SBC. I don't know how it can. You watch the SBC meeting this summer. It is well worth our attention. We'll keep an eye on it. That's for certain. Because I don't want this to happen, but I fear there will be a sloughing off. You see it. Whenever a movement moves away from its core, you are going to get splinter groups. And we're starting to see them already with the SBC, even though those groups are staying in the SBC. I think when they address CRT this summer at the Southern Baptist Convention, you're going to see people leave. What will that division be? What percentage? I don't know. I'm not that deep into the Southern Baptist Convention, what's going on. But this has the power to divide because CRT is an entire hermeneutic. It is almost a worldview. This is how you interpret the Bible. You don't read the Bible anymore the same way when everything is about oppressor and oppressed. You read the story of the woman at the well differently when this is involved, don't you? You know what was going on there? Because the Jews, they were oppressing the Samaritans, and Jesus, therefore, was liberating the Samaritans and telling them to revolt because they were under the heavy fist of Jerusalem. What? I thought it was a demonstration that God loves the world and that Jesus was omniscient and that Jesus desired to save people and there was a good conversation about what true worship is, not when your hermeneutic is CRT. And wow, does it set people up for anger, doesn't it? Quote, we cannot dismantle racism in a system that exploits people for private profit. If we want to dismantle racism, then we must build a movement for economic justice. Read socialism. That's what's going on in Oregon. Middle school, mathematics class. And you have been weary of hearing about CRT. This thing is divisive. And this thing is not going to stay in the classroom. It does. It hasn't already. You know where this really got started, where this really began to get a foothold? Law schools. That's where this critical law theory is where it started. Just replace that middle word with whatever critical theology theory, critical Jesus theory. And it's all about bringing in this framework to dismantle and divide and to tear down what formerly existed. And we think that this is a helpful analytical tool for reading our Bibles? This is Wretched Radio.
I say potato, you say potato. I say primer, he says primer. For the last 20 years, there's been a remarkable amount of talk about the gospel. But could it be that we've been talking more about the message than we have the wellspring of the message? The word gospel is used 25 times in the New Testament, but the word Jesus is used 691 times. Have we majored more on the message than we have on the center of the message? Maybe it's time we fill our hearts and our conversations more with Jesus. And Wretched has a unique opportunity for you to begin doing just that. Pastor Milton Vincent has written a powerful book that we know will grow your love for Christ. He calls it The Gospel Primer. I say primer. Either way, we wanted to make this book available to you because we want you to begin to experience the joy of the Lord in a more powerful way. Get your copy of The Gospel Primer by visiting wretched.org/gospel. That's wretched.org/gospel.
Yes, you're busy, but I suspect you could spare 2 minutes if it saved you $500 a month. Please call MediShare for 120 seconds and they will give you a quote on affordable biblical health sharing, an alternative to health insurance. You get free telehealth services, a huge network of doctors, customer support, people praying for you, and 400,000 members sharing one another's health burdens. That is what MediShare is about. And on average, you will save, whether you are a single or a family, $500 per month. It will take you 2 minutes to make a phone call and find out how you could be saving and have peace of mind. Got 2 minutes? Call 844-34-BIBLE. 844-34-BIBLE.
Hey, yo, fam, it's your main man, Jimmy Jam. Apparently, the hip and relevant thing to do these days is target millennials, and that's exactly what we've done, too. We found our very own millennial, John Fabares, who put together a squad and hit the road to tackle the tough issues that millennials are struggling with. Why is there evil in the world? Is Jesus really God? What is truth? Millennials have questions, and Road Trip to Truth is answering those questions in a clear, concise, and biblical manner. We want to reach this generation, your kids and your grandkids, and we believe this resource is an excellent way to open the door to important conversations we need to be having. Visit roadtriptotruth.org and get your copy of this 13-episode series along with the Bible study that's perfect for middle schoolers through adults. It's roadtriptotruth.org. Roadtriptotruth.org.
Important dates in Christian history. 1273. Thomas Aquinas completes work on Summa Theologica, the theological masterpiece of the Middle Ages. Aquinas synthesized faith and reason, incorporating Aristotelian philosophy into his work, and provided a theological framework for Catholic doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If this doesn't do it, I don't know what will. This is the worst impression of Jimmy Durante and Wretched Radio, all wrapped up into one. Road Trip to Truth encouragement. If you have not taken a peek at this resource that we have at wretched.org/roadtrip, Perhaps this will persuade you to get it for your kids and use it in youth groups hosted by the whippersnapper John Fabares, Compass Bible Church. You know, as Pop Mike Fabares, really fine preacher on radio all over the country. Son, John, addressing the issues that your kids are being confronted with, whether you are aware of it or not. It's a resource called Road Trip to Truth. This is John Fabares.
If you saw a kid sitting on this ledge, I hope that you try to talk them down because they could really fall and hurt themselves. Now imagine the child said, it's not dangerous. Even if I fall, nothing's gonna happen to me. Naturally, you would give this kid a mini science lesson and remind him that the laws of gravity never fail. And if he falls, gravity will take hold of him and introduce him to the ground in a very unpleasant way. Now imagine that kid says, ha, I don't even believe in gravity. What would you think about that kid? At the very least, you would think he's being pretty foolish. Why? Because in the realm of science, we all understand that there are laws. And if we ignore those laws, there are immediate consequences, right? Same thing is true with math. 2 + 2 = 4. Do you think 2 × 2 = 4?
Yeah.
Is that true?
I guess so.
Is it a fact?
Of course it's a fact.
Yeah, right. It's a fact. It's true. I agree with you. So why do we all agree that there's absolute truths in the realms of math and science, but when it comes to religion, all bets are off?
By the way, that's changing as we've just been hearing about this undoing racism in mathematics. And isn't that a clever little scheme? At least historically, it's been a bad Greek dualistic division between math, sciences, and morality and religion. They're two different realms. You can trust the one, but not the other. What are the kids being taught these days? You can't trust anything, including math and science. Can't wait to see how that's going to play out in the next decade.
So for you, would you tell me that I'm wrong if I said that I was a Christian? Do you think that that's wrong?
No.
No. Okay. Do you think it's right?
It's not right or wrong. It's your personal belief. You have the right to believe what you want to believe.
It seems we have some realms, like science and math, that have unviolatable laws that are true for everyone.
You know what? We're going to have to change that soon. Seriously. I'll bet in a decade we're going to look back and go, oh, yeah. Remember when the kids mostly thought 2 + 2 = 4?
Not in the realm of religion. No doubt you've been told that faith is a personal issue, that if you believe in God and that works for you, that that's your truth, but it doesn't apply to me. This is mostly due to something called postmodernism.
And we go about the business of explaining exactly what that is all about. And trust me, your kids, they've more than heard about it. They're getting bathed in it.
In order to understand postmodernism, we kind of need to know a little bit of the history of Western civilization, where it came from.
Right.
Starting with the Enlightenment, we have the introduction of rationalism, the idea that reason and science are going to be the lens through which many in Western civilization view the world. For really about 250 to 300 years, as part of this Enlightenment movement, there were many who were very optimistic about what science and reason could accomplish, that there were absolute universal truths, and that the way to discover those truths was primarily through science and reason. But as we get into the 20th century, especially after World War I and World War II, and we see that science and reason only gets us to mass global destruction,
sure,
you begin to have some pessimism that seeps into the way in which philosophers and thinkers think about what's knowable. And that pessimistic response to modernism is that view that we can know things through science and reason, is called postmodernism. It continues to view science and reason as essential, but it's no longer optimistic about what can be accomplished.
Do you believe that all truth is relative, person to person?
Yeah.
Do you believe that mathematics and scientific laws are relative, person to person?
Yes. Because that's just my own personal views.
In other words, postmodernism says that those universal absolute truth claims, we don't think that those are knowable, but instead that truth is relative and that our ability to understand truth is limited by our finite experience and it's tied to our individual perspective. So it becomes relative, it becomes subjective.
Do you think it's possible for me to believe something and you to believe something and then to be totally opposed and for both of us to be right?
I do. I feel like that is the case. I mean, being like that, I have a boyfriend, right? So like we'll be arguing and I feel like my truth is right and he feels like his is, and he's like really strong about what his truth is and I'm really strong about mine. And it's like, even though we have two completely different opinions, we both feel like that's the truth and like that's how it should
be. Once again, the shell game. Truth and opinion are two different things. Dr. Nathan Booznitz with John Fabara's Road Trip to Truth, Season 1, available at wretched.org/roadtrip. How we got here.
People look to reason and to science to answer their questions about why things work the way they work in the universe. Going even back to the Enlightenment, we have another movement called Romanticism, which taught people that the pursuit of their own happiness was their chief end in life. And so you take those two things, you combine them together, you really get an explanation philosophically for where people are coming from. There is no absolute truth. That's postmodernism.
Who determines what truth is?
You do.
When it comes to understanding the natural universe, reason and science give us everything we need. That's modernism or naturalism.
What is love, and how do you describe that?
Series of chemical reactions that creates and guides humans to mate and reproduce. It's an evolutionary thing.
And the goal of my life is to please myself. That's romanticism.
What do you think the purpose of life is?
To be happy. Your personal happiness.
So you have a combination of those three worldviews that make up the popular philosophy that most people live their lives by. They may or may not give lip service to some sort of deity.
I think that religion shouldn't be necessary for people to be ethical, but I think it can help, and I think it can be a good guide.
But in the end, they're convinced, based on those philosophical worldviews, that they don't really need God, because science and reason gives them all the information they need. Postmodernism allows them to put a bubble around themselves and insulate their own presuppositions, and then romanticism gives them the purpose for life, to please myself.
Romanticism is a bigger influence than I think we give it credit. It's everywhere. You can do anything you want to do. Live for yourself. You be you. Anytime you see, walk through the stores, any dish towel that has a slogan on it telling you you're amazing, dream your dreams, you can accomplish what you want to, do what makes you happy. All romanticism. How do we unwind this worldview? You think logic and reason. Nope. Their logic and reason machines are broken. They need the gospel, which is why we, of course, included in every single one of the 13 episodes of Season 1 of Road Trip to Truth.
The book of Hebrews says very clearly that it is appointed to men once to die and then comes judgment. And so from a biblical perspective, what I want to do is I want to plead with people who are hopeless because of the philosophical system in which they're trapped, the worldview in which they're trapped. I want to plead with them to come to Christ, because he will give them meaning for this life, and he will also give them hope for eternity.
What do you think happens when people don't embrace Jesus as the only way? What happens to those people when they die?
As Christians, you know, we are told, even though this is not the nicest way to say it, but you know, if you're not a believer of God, when you do pass away, you do go to hell.
What is hell?
Hell is damnation. It's punishment for sin.
Do you think hell lasts forever?
I do.
Which is not always fun to hear, but it is the truth.
Is there anyone reliable to tell us if this is true or not, to save us from a lot of pain? The answer is yes. There is someone reliable, and that person is Jesus Christ himself.
The answer to the despair and the hopelessness is the good news of salvation through Jesus Christ. Science and reason can't answer questions like where this universe comes from,
right,
or what happens after we die. And romanticism, the pursuit of your own selfish pleasure, can't satisfy your soul. God in his word answers those ultimate questions, and God through his son provides the soul satisfaction that every person is longing for.
Jesus Christ is God in the flesh, and the Bible says it's actually impossible for him to tell a lie. Impossible. Jesus Christ always told the truth. And reliable eyewitnesses wrote down what Jesus said in the Bible.
This isn't just an academic discussion about different philosophical systems. If you think that science and reason is all that there is in terms of explaining this natural world, if you think there is no God and that you're nothing more than the product of chance and natural selection and an evolutionary process that's impersonal, and if the goal of your life is just to please yourself, then there is no ultimate meaning, And pretty soon you're going to exhaust the attempts to be happy, and then there's no personal meaning. And life without meaning becomes meaningless, and people are empty. That kind of emptiness not only destroys people's lives in this world, but it means that they enter eternity unprepared for the life to come.
And that is why we point to Jesus, not just as the soul satisfier, which he is, but the savior of your soul. The gospel, crystal clear in every one of the 13 episodes of A Road Trip to Truth, available at wretched.org/roadtrip. Don't forget about the study guide, because these ideas that you heard expressed from these kids on university campuses, your kids are already getting it in middle school. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.